Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 53, The Morning After. I'm your host, Jesse Kiefer. In studio today, Ned Elliott, chef and owner of Foreign and Domestic in Austin, Texas. Welcome, Ned.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going very, very well. I hear you've been riding the chef event train, as I like to call it, here in New York City. So we'll chat with him about what he's been up to in New York and about the food scene in Austin, because I don't know a damn thing about it, and I can't wait to hear about it. Later in the show, Jen and I will catch up with Ryan Butler, executive pastry chef of Highlands Restaurant Group, and everyone's favorite MC, Jen Atari, will stop by later for this week's installment of What's on the Menu at Chardonnay's. But first, one of our favorite segments, Front of House, all about the
Did your mind touch the void for a minute?
That's a little bit from one of my favorite Front of House episodes, as the Dame remembers Guy Fieri's wonderful review in the New York Times. So the front of house segment is about woes and blunders from the front of house side of the restaurant industry. And our episode today comes from a very good friend of the show whose front of house blunder is so incriminating that we have decided to let them remain anonymous. Let me just call up the front of house for today. It was a full moon, which in the restaurant world can be a terrifying thing. Toilets back up, glassware shatters continuously, but worst of all, seemingly normal people can go batshit crazy. Case in point, the door to the restaurant flies open and in tears my former manager. It has been months since manager X worked at restaurant X, and this is her first time back. She stops herself in the center of the restaurant between the bar and the dining room and proceeds to gutturally shout, "Hey-o!" while simultaneously doing a booty drop. Heads turn, and this act prompts one guest to comment, "Wow, she should really come out of her shell." Manager X takes a seat, and it becomes immediately apparent that the full moon transformation has begun. Manager X stands up with her back to the table next to her to pose for a picture. In preparation for the photo, she begins to flip her hair, swishing it all over the food of the table behind her. The slightly annoyed diners carefully tap Manager X on the shoulder to say, "Can you please back up a little? Your hair is getting in our food." To which Manager X replies drunkly, "My hair is in your food?" and proceeds to grab the startled table's plates. "Well, we'll get you new food then," she slurs. Completely unaware of Manager X's relation to Restaurant X, the diners fear for the worst and grab their plates back. A tug of war ensues. "I'll take these to the kitchen," she says. "No, no, thank you," shout the annoyed diners. "Oh, so you aren't happy with your food?" Manager X declares. At this point, the bartender finally intervenes. "What seems to be the problem here?" he says calmly. "Well, these people don't like their food," bitches Manager X. "They're not enjoying their experience." The bartender whisks away the upset diners as Manager X storms out into the night. Later we learned the diners thought Manager X was going to punch them. And I like to think Manager X was only trying to help. If it wasn't for that damned full moon. Thank you. I didn't realize so many people were in studio to applaud that. We'll be right back on The Morning After with Ned Elliott of Foreign and Domestic in Austin, Texas.
The moment is gone and is. Return is months away. We dream.
drink gin, fill Pimm's cups now.
You're listening to All the Time by Controller on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And plenty of tankery. A week spent drunk on holiday will keep the world.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
And we're back here on The Morning After. In studio, Chef Ned Elliott, owner and chef of Foreign and Domestic in Austin, Texas. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I met Ned not too long ago, and he mentioned to me that he is in New York City doing a couple of events, and so you were doing, what is the turkey leg bowl?
Yeah, we did the turkey leg ball.
I said bowl. I mean,
we did that on a Wednesday night. It's for a couple of guys, Andrew Steinhall and Chris Stang, who have a website called Immaculate Infatuation, and we did an event for them in Austin for South by Southwest.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise known as South by.
Yeah, I mean, who's heard of that?
And then did that for them, and it was a huge party. Sort of their, sort of their Christmas present to the friends that are on their website, the people that that frequent that. And that was for about 550, 600 people Wednesday night at the Hudson Terrace. And then last night we did City Grit, a little pop-up with Sarah Simmons, who is the chef owner of City Grit.
And City Grit is, it's like a, I think what she calls like a dining salon or something that, where there's, it's not just like a restaurant. It's like you're coming for the experience. You're paying for the, the wine and for kind of guest chefs to come in and cook, right?
Yeah. So it was Jody and myself. And then we, knowing our friend Darren Palace here from a Red Hook Winery, mm-hmm. and all that they've been through with Sandy, so we decided, that would be a great thing to do, is really highlight, Red Hook wines and really push that. And so it was fun. It was the first time that we were really able to come back to New York since we left in 2007 and cook for people. And it was, I think, 50, 55 people turned out, which was a great...
That's amazing.
Great turnout. That we're just a small 45-seat restaurant in Austin, Texas. So.
And so you compare dishes with Red Hook wines?
What we do is basically just did sort of a greatest hits dinner of things that, we're sort of known for, from our black pepper and Gruyere popovers to beef heart tartare to crispy fried beef tongue with yogurt and mint and horseradish and different things like that. And then had Darren bring in a couple of cases of different wines that he thought would go well with that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I love this story. So you're not a stranger to New York City, though. It's not like you're just randomly here. you went to culinary school.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Went to a CIA in the Hudson Valley.
Exactly. And then what was your first job out of there in the city?
I actually didn't graduate from CIA.
Oh, okay. You just
drop out,
whatever.
Yeah.
Wipe your hands.
Yeah. I went on my internship in between the year one and two, and was at had been here working for free at the old Aquavit, which was in the Rockefeller mm-hmm. townhouse on 54th or something like that. And then did my internship at Tabla. And
amazing.
3 weeks into it, they were like, we would hire you. And I was like, sweet, I'm tired of making $6.75 an hour. Mm-hmm. So they bumped me up to $8.08 an hour.
And then you were, I did my research a little bit. You were at Essex House.
Yeah.
Under Elaine Ducasse.
Yes.
Which is pretty impressive.
Went there, and that I would say that was, the most, the best learning experience, met my mentor, Doug Saltis there,
mm-hmm.
Whom I worked 4 years later at Country, when I was the chef de cuisine of the cafe at Country. And just the guys that I worked with there, you know, we still keep in touch with a lot of people. It's one of those things sort of like, I'd liken it to like graduate school or, you know, something like that, you know, of 3 years of just craziness of working for, you know, $22,000-$23,000 a year, working 95 hours a week, mm-hmm. You know, 6 days. That's basically your family, you know, that you have off from 1 a.m. on, you know, Sunday morning to 10 a.m. Monday morning. And everybody goes out until 10 a.m. on, you know, Sunday morning.
Exactly. And then things got easier for you when you moved on to Per Se, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so Jody and I were on the opening team of Per Se with Jonathan and Benno and a bunch of other friends of ours. You know, and that was crazy, too. We had to go through the fire and all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was a great learning experience as well. And, you know, working for Chef Thomas Keller, you know, he's amazing, you know, and just really an all-around, you know, amazing chef, but all-around amazing guy as well, amazing person.
That's great to hear. I read the book. I can't remember her last name. My first name is Phoebe. I read her book called Service Included.
Oh, right. Yes.
Which is all about the front of house perspective for the most part of opening Per Se. And how she got to that. So I kind of love that you're kind of an insider in this.
Yeah, because I mean, it's with any restaurant opening, you know, and I'm sure that you could go into foreign and domestic in the, you know, the backlogs or the annals of it, you know, and find people that were like, whoa, this was insane. You know, even for a small 45 seat, just a la carte restaurant in Austin, Texas. I mean, it's just, there's always, you know, so many curveballs that come out of nowhere, mm-hmm. you know, that you just don't expect. I mean, just the fire.
I mean, I've actually thought that nothing would make better reality television than the opening of a restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it because would be there's insane. Drama, there's injury, there's, you know,
yeah, I mean, there's violence, sex,
alcohol,
nudity, there's everything. Yeah. Everything. Drunkenness.
So what brought you from New York to Austin?
So we left New York. Jody and I left New York in 2007.
And Jody is your partner at Foreign and Domestic.
Yeah, my partner at Foreign and Domestic. We used to be married. We got divorced about 15 months ago. But we're still great friends. We have a daughter together, Billy Van. And so we went to Portland, Oregon, was there for about 2 years. And Jody's from San Antonio, Texas. And being a Texan and having, you know, gray skies for 9 months straight does mm-hmm. not jive. And it was all right with me to a certain standpoint. And we were, you know, pretty close on signing on a space there. And just looked at each other at like 3 a.m. one day in bed. And we're like, there's no way. Like just the pitter-patter of rain. And they're like, wow, we need to go somewhere that has a fewer, you know, rainy days than that. And
I mean, all good decisions made at 3 a.m.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me know, you know, what is your focus at Foreign and Domestic?
So for myself, you know, I worked at places like Ducasse and Tabla, Per Se and Picholine and Country. And we did a very conscious effort to sort of stay away from, you know, that realm of the 3 and 4 star, 2 and 3 Michelin star restaurant sort of dining, and sort of make it sort of like an everyman restaurant. And I look a lot to, you know, the way that I grew up. I was raised by two moms, Sandra and Linda, and Sandra's family is from Southeast Ohio into Appalachia. And so a lot of the things that we have of beef tongue, heart, brains, and things like that, country ham, I grew up eating. And so that was, you know, the older I get, the more I go back to that.
I mean, not your everyday food to grow up
right.
with, Offal.
And that's not everything on the menu. You know, there are a couple of highlights like that, you know. And we, you know, my philosophy on food is just, you know, I like, you know, nice, big, bold, but clean flavors. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you say that something is supposed to taste like, you know, it's a Riesling gelée, then let's, you know, have a knock your socks off Riesling flavor mm-hmm. to it, you know. And so we really wanted to do that, and we're small. We're very much a mom and pop, you know, atmosphere and operation. We just acquired 2 shipping container cafes that we're going to be taking over as bakeries for Jody.
That's amazing, because we broadcast the studio from 2 shipping containers.
Right. Yeah, so they were formerly La Boite cafes in Austin, and now they're going to be the F&D bake sales, and under the you know, direction of Jody, which is going to be great for her because that's something that she's always you know, wanted to be able to do. Was not necessarily a huge bakery of breads and things like that, but mm-hmm. more of what she loves with, like, old school Americana, you know, cookies and pies and muffins and breads and things like that.
So you, I mean, it sounds like you're, you know, while you're taking all of the skills that you've learned at these higher end restaurants, you've really molded them into something that is completely approachable for people
right.
Austin. And I don't want to, like, try to dumb down any food scene in Austin, but I mean, yeah, maybe you can let me know, like, do you fit perfectly within what's going on there and
yeah,
what
definitely.
The trends are?
You know, we've been there for 3.5 years, and just seeing the dining scene really do a complete 180, you know, since we've gotten there. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of talented chefs from, you know, Bryce Gilmore at Barley Swine to Rene Ortiz, who's at La Condesa and about to open up Sway. You know, to the guys at, you know, Sean Serkeel with Parkside and Backspace. You know, there's a whole movement of, you know, chefs that are, you know, right around, I'm 37, right around my age, a little bit younger, doing some really, you know, amazing things that you wouldn't, you know, from an outsider. And even, you know, I'm not a Texan, you know, I wasn't mm-hmm. born there, so I can't be a Texan, but, you know, from an outsider.
It would be hard.
Yeah.
Hard to fake it.
You know, from an outsider, you would think, oh, okay, Texas, it's going to be Tex-Mex, Mexican and barbecue. And just doing, you know, trying to do as much as, you know, the farm to table or farm to plate, whatever you want to call that, you know, in keeping with, you know, our values with that. And then also at the same time, you know, putting, you know, people's own personal spin on it so that, you know, I think that that's one of the really outstanding things that Austin has to offer is that, it, you know, the point of view, that mm-hmm. there are so many restaurants opening with just, whether you like it or not, it's somebody's point of view, which is mm-hmm. always great, you know.
Which sounds very Texan.
Yeah.
but so is there anything in Austin that you can get produce wise or livestock wise that you can't get here in New York City? I mean, I know I feel like living in New York, we can get anything we want here. Mm-hmm. But is there, you know, anything special?
You know, one of the things, you know, is just. A lot, especially a lot of like the variety and organ meats, you know, mm-hmm. that I love to cook. We can get them, you know, a much more readily available than in New York, you know, through, you know, people that you can get deliveries every day. And I think too, you know, just the growing season are different. I mean, it's today, I think the high in Austin's 82. So there's still one of the farms that we deal with has strawberries, like fresh strawberries
still
this week. Yeah. You know, and the Gulf Coast, when you go down to Houston and more on the coast, mm-hmm. which is about 3 hours from Austin, January and February is their strawberry season.
Wow,
so yeah, it's insane.
So seasonality kind of plays a completely different role,
right?
In your
you know,
world.
And people are like, "Oh, there are no seasons." Well, there are, but yeah, I mean, we were just going through persimmons and kumquats and things like that, and now we're back to there's been sort of a, you know, quote unquote Indian summer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're about 15, 18 degrees higher than we should be, you know, so that we have things like, you know, strawberries and still fresh greens coming from the ground that aren't, you know, greenhoused.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really great from that point, you know, but at the same time from the Midwest, from Cincinnati, Ohio,
sure.
and lived here for about a decade and miss, you know, like just being cold and wanting to sit in front of like a fire or a hearth or something and eating, you know, your face off. You know, it's kind of hard to do that when, it, you know, in the middle of summer when it's 105 out.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that your time in New York has made you feel a little bit better about, you've got your season fix and then you can
yes.
go back to your nice weather because I don't think anybody's going to feel too bad for
yeah,
you
I'm
about
starting
that.
To get a cold. So I'm like,
oh,
actually,
Lord.
Tomorrow 82 is going to feel great.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by, Ned.
Thank you.
And where can people check out Foreign and Domestic?
Our website is FND. Frank Ned David, the letters FND, Austin.com. So
okay.
you can go on there and check us out. And our Twitter is just Foreign Domestic, too. So you can check that out as well.
Great. Thank you so much. Awesome. We'll be right back on The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Kursk by Controller on heritageradionetwork.org.
In studio, Ryan Butler, executive pastry chef for Highland Restaurant Group.
Woo-woo!
Welcome to the studio, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
How you doing today?
I'm good. Very good.
Now, Ryan, you and I have had the distinct pleasure of working with each other. Maybe more a pleasure on my part than yours. You don't have to answer that. For the last couple of years for Highlands Restaurant Group, which for those of you who don't know is Highlands Restaurant in the West Village and just around the corner, Whitehall. You and I began working together at Mary Queen of Scots, now work at Highlands and Whitehall. We have a new dessert on the menu at Highlands that I'm very excited about. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, it's actually a really simple, salty caramel chocolate tart with, you know, chocolate Oreo kind of cookie base and just some sweetened whipped cream.
I may or may not have eaten a couple on my shift last night.
It sounds like stoner food.
It is stoner food.
It's delightful. Now, you've been getting a lot of press this year, and justifiably so because you're awesome. But you just did Martha Stewart Radio, right?
I did. I did it Tuesday morning.
What was that experience like?
That was good. A little, you know, I don't really like going up to Midtown very much, but, you know, it was
for
nice.
For Martha,
maybe. You know, we talked about holiday recipes and all that kind of thing.
Now, did you go ahead, Jesse?
I was going to say, did you go to the Del Frisco's downstairs?
I would never go to the Del Frisco's downstairs.
You get a steak and a martini.
Double Eagle Steakhouse.
Woo!
The one time I was at Sirius when Jason was on Martha Stewart Radio with Amanda Freitag, I definitely waited at the Del Frisco's bar for him. I had to. It felt like one of those like Midtown kind of institutions that I would never go to unless I was.
I want to go.
Right.
Their Taxi TV commercial alone. Right. Which we want to go every time. It's like bad jazz. Ladies in cocktail dresses pouring wine. Mm-hmm. It's just like all the things that have nothing to do with food that would make tourists want to go to Del Frisco's.
Well, did you see those onion rings? They're like the size of the Eiffel Tower.
They're like hula hoops.
Yeah, huge.
They're like hula hoop onion.
Biggest onion ring
in America. Guy Fieri somewhere.
So speaking of hula hoops, how did you get started in pastry, Ryan?
I'm actually from upstate New York, and I worked when I was a kid. I actually watched a lot of TV, a lot of PBS, and I watched Great Chefs of the World. And I watched that, and I always waited for the last segment, and that was the dessert part. So I really wanted to be a chef from when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I just was always really interested in it. So when I was about 15, I started working in the business. I worked at a actually Mexican restaurant as like a prep cook / busboy, you know. And then, you know, at this place called the Texas Taco, which is on Route 22, and it's run by this tiny little lady named Rosemary, and she has a big purple mohawk. And she got her start, actually, really interesting, in front of CBGB. She used to run this stand. And then she took it from what it was and then brought it upstate and then opened this restaurant. Now, actually, Diane von Furstenberg owns the property and gave it to her. So
oh
it's kind of like a cool story. It looks like Pee-wee's Playhouse.
So what you're trying to tell us is you got your start with the coolest person that ever lived.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, she was kind of crazy. She always thought I was on, like, drugs and stuff all the time.
Because she was.
Right, yes. She was. She used to buy pot from us.
So you're working at Texas Taco.
Right, and then, you know, I just happened to, like, be driving by one day, and there was a bake shop right next to that. And so I went in there and was like, can I work here? So for free, because you needed to get into culinary school, you needed experience at that time. It's not like that anymore, but when I was coming up, it was. So I used to go there in the morning, and then I would go to high school, then I would go to my other job, and that's basically it, and wow. taking it from there. And
what, now, what kind of work would they have you do at what I'm imagining to be 5 in the morning before high school?
Can I say bitch work on the radio?
Yes, you can.
But it was basically bitch work, you know, but I learned how to fry the donuts and make the Danish dough and kind of proofing breads in these huge ovens and stuff. It was very, very cool looking back on it now. But then I went to the CIA, and then from there I just have been cooking in New York City since then, since I was 19.
And so pastry to me is always kind of, it's a very, very calculated style of cooking versus, I don't know, cooking savory or something like that. Do you feel like you have that kind of mindset where you're really good with measurements and numbers? I'm terrible at math, so
right.
I can't.
Right, so I'm completely awful. I don't know why I do what I do. But it's more for me, you know, those ratios and stuff always need to be the same, but like you kind of can take that and twist it up in a little bit. A little bit, and kind of make it your own.
For those who can't see us, as Ryan is talking about exact measurements and being precise in baking, Jesse Kiefer just fumbled her own banana.
I was eating a banana, and I dropped it on the ground. It's beside the point.
Yeah, you know, it's like I was saying. You know, you could take those basic ratios and kind of play with them a little bit. You know, I don't want to call it like pastry jazz, but, you know, it's kind of trial and error a little bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, being that I'm not really a very exact person. I'm kind of a fly by the seat of my pants kind of person. But, you know, if you have that basic recipe and those basic ratios and you follow them, things should turn out pretty well.
I always wonder with pastry chefs, you know, when you're working in a concept restaurant, for lack of a better term, Highlands Restaurant Group is a British company. Whitehall's is British focused fare. Highlands is Scottish focused fare. How much does that affect your creation and the parameters within which you're supposed to work?
I mean, you know, there are guidelines, but I mean, the lines are pretty blurred, you know, when it comes to what I do. You know, it's more desserts or, you know, they're based, like, I like to do everything based on traditional stuff, so you're kind of comfortable with it, kind of comfort food in it, and then throwing, like, a bit of a twist in, and in the end, and then people kind of can relate to it, and they're not scared by it. You know what I mean? It's more like, say we have an apple tart, and we'll add a little bit of miso or something into it, but we won't even tell you sometimes, but it's there, you know, and that's just kind of like, you know, a little more of an experience. But those guidelines are, in a way, good, because then you're not, you know, flying all over the radar.
Right.
You know, because, like, say I wanted to put, like, you know, some kind of green tea and yuzu dessert on the British menu, it just wouldn't make any sense. Right. So it kind of helps me to, like, go in the right direction, but at the same time, it's a little, sometimes can be stifling. I mean, not for me, but a lot of people could, you know, just be like, oh, what do I do now? I've done all these things already, so here I am, you know.
I'm one of the things that impresses me about you is I feel like not only a handsome man, but prolific. I feel like you're constantly creating new things and new dishes. And when we worked together at MQS, I remember there was just constantly new stuff pumping out of your kitchen, and it was all really exciting. And I get to see you less now, which bums me out. But I'm just wondering if there's any particular thing you're working on now that you're excited about.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually just switching the entire menu over. We're going more into a wintry kind of thing from fall. I have, you know, a nice play on a Christmas pudding that I'm working on. You know, stuff with some tropical fruit, because that's what's in season and available now.
Right.
And more lemon and citrus. Mm. So we'll see with that. Some more wintry spice kind of thing.
I want that, and I want some eggnog with scotch
eggnog,
in it.
Eggnog will be involved. But it could be rum, though. Sailor strength, you know, rum.
I mean, I think it's so great that obviously there's all this farm-to-table, like, focus on seasonality, on the savory side of food, and I love that pastry can go that route. I mean, why wouldn't it? And, I mean, hats off to you for bringing that into Highlands. That's great.
Thank you very much. I mean, I feel like, you know, you shouldn't be serving or, frankly, eating, you know, strawberries in January, because they're not from where you live. They're coming in a truck filled with gas from somewhere else in the country. And it's just not healthy. I mean, it's not necessary either. You know, have your jams that you made in the summer and, you know, and have some, you know, bananas and some tropical stuff, some pineapple that are all, you know, fresh, and they're actually grown, you know, now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's just one of those things I really believe in. And it kind of bothers me to see, you know, fruit and stuff like that on menus that shouldn't be in season. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't know.
I feel like coming from small town America and in my experience, probably the thing that I was most shocked to learn about the actual proper food industry, particularly in New York, was pastry. I feel like that was the one leg that surprised me the most because, you know, again, I grew up in the rural South / Midwest where it was like, all right, ice cream, cake, Duncan Hines cake, and then, you know, pies that your mom made. So doing really innovative and beautifully crafted and surprising things with pastry. I remember when I was first starting out as a server in New York, I was like, oh, you could do that? You could. I've never even heard of star anise. Like, it would never have occurred to me to put it in this thing with sugar and flour. But yeah, it's really cool. And I think especially for you, because you are working with a British company, the savory menu is very traditional. You know, people come in and they're eating beef Wellington, they're eating shepherd's pie, and then you have this beautiful accompanying pastry menu that's really sexy and surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever feel, and I may be an idiot for saying this, but do you ever feel like there's a stigma on male pastry chefs? I feel like people, it may be a stupid question, but I feel like people expect a female pastry chef. No idea why, but do you ever get any of that kind of weird feedback?
Well, I mean, you know, there's always that little bit of a jokey thing in the kitchen between the savory cooks and the pastry chefs. But I mean, being a pretty big dude, I don't really, but, you know, I don't really deal with that kind of thing. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like, I think it should be a team building thing, especially for me personally. I mean, I've cooked savory food before, so mm-hmm. I can cook as well. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like one of those things. I think people should really focus, especially in pastry, on being able to cook some savory food, because then, you know, the respect level should be there. I don't know why. I mean, you know, maybe for women, I don't want to go there in this. I'm trying not to do it in the right way. I'm trying not to be PC on this one, but I mean, you know, being on the line, it's hot. You burn yourself, you cut mm-hmm. yourself, you know what I mean? You have some guy screaming at you all day long. You know, and some for a lot of women, I think the route of pastry is a little more, you know, calculated, a little calmer, you know.
They don't want to be in the military.
Exactly. I mean, it depends.
I'd like to think that I would be a phenomenal line cook.
I think you would, too.
Yeah, people would fear me.
Fear.
Fear me. They already do. Jesse's terrified right now.
We chef.
Just, I mean, I read this study a few years ago. Somebody wrote, I don't know if it was correct or not, but they said between male pastry chefs and female, women focused on more of a flavor and more of like a comfort. And then men focused on a little more flashy, like flamingo type dessert. And I thought it was kind of interesting because it's kind of true.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at people, I mean, I'm not stereotyping, so no one get mad at me, come and try to fight me or anything. But, you know, I just read that and I thought it was pretty interesting.
So you've got a lot of tweels and
yeah, just,
umbrellas and
umbrellas.
Jesse's been waiting the whole interview just to say tweel.
I do love that word. Tweel.
It means tile in French. I mean, you know.
Well, from the expert.
Well, you did go to school for this, so we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk about a place that does not have any tweels of any sorts. Our favorite restaurant, Chardonnay's. Morning After.
You're listening to Heaven by Obesity on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
And we're back on The Morning After. In this week's installment of What's on the Menu at Chardonnay's, Chardonnay is our favorite restaurant.
Oh, it's ladies' night at Chardonnay's.
We've invited everyone's favorite MC to kick off Chardonnay's. Jenna Tari, welcome to the studio.
What's up, y'all? Thank you for having me. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, how do y'all fit 62 people in this tiny room? That's crazy. I'm so excited to be here emceeing Ladies Night at Chardonnay's, my favorite place for love. Tonight on our menu, we are featuring several decadent, delicious dishes. First off, we have de-thawed fish sticks with a cocktail sauce. Second off, we have a grilled cheese, Velveeta grilled cheese on Wonder Bread with the crust cut off. Crust left on is optional for the ladies. Third off, we have espresso martinis. Get up to get down. You know what I'm saying? After your espresso martini, come see me at the bar, baby. We're going to do some oatmeal cookie shots. Keep it smooth. I'm Jenna Tari.
Thanks for coming in, Jenna Tari.
Thank you for having me. I'll see y'all Chardonnays.
Now, Ryan, what would you serve for dessert at Chardonnay's aside from espresso martinis?
It had to be icebox cake with Miracle Whip.
Now, I don't know what an icebox cake is.
You know, I've never had icebox
cake. No, what's wrong with me?
Icebox cake is basically like smashing store-bought cookies into store-bought Miracle Whip and sticking it in the freezer.
Oh, my God. So do you eat it actually frozen?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Out of the ice box.
I know, say, I know just, like, exactly what that is.
Is it a southern thing?
It's a southern thing.
Yes, I have eaten many an ice box cake. Oh my God, that is hilarious. Just Miracle Whip in general, the existence of Miracle Whip. I remember a classic dessert that my grandmother would do was angel food cake, you know, that she would buy already made, of course. Angel food cake with like frozen strawberries and Miracle Whip. Mm-hmm. And then she would pour, because she would have preserved the strawberries, so she'd pour that like syrup, that high fructose corn syrup that was now dyed red all over the angel food cake so it would become soggy. And then you would just like scoop up a big dollop of that Miracle Whip with that soggy death cake.
And just Jenna is putting her hand in the form of a claw right now.
That's how you had
like
to eat it.
Claw.
Well, also, it could physically, you know, inspire rigor mortis. I feel like it was hard to move after eating that.
You know what, though? If you really think about it, in theory, if you made that with all fresh, like, ingredients,
it would be delicious.
That sounds like the bomb.
Sure.
I mean, isn't that strawberry shortcake, basically?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, soaking the cake is like a Savarin French-style dessert, you know? In theory,
don't
you were
tell
there.
My grandmother that.
I will. Let's call her.
She's keep like, I told you. I was watching Paula Deen and she said, just soak it in whatever you had.
All right, y'all.
It's like the ladies' donut hamburger for brunch.
Jesse, my life will be made if we could do a Southern installment of our morning after tour eventually. And I really want to take you down to Kentucky and take you to some of the places I grew up eating at, because I don't know that you'll ever be the same.
I mean, I'm one of those people also who I feel like a jerk when I do it. But if someone speaks to me in an accent, I like respond to them with an accent. Like when we did Bonnaroo, when
sure
I was in Tennessee,
really like
I feel like I said y'all a lot. Jack Inslee in the booth, he's nodding his head that I actually did do that. How embarrassing.
Well, speaking of accents, so you're from upstate, Albany?
Me? No. Like I'm from the suburbs of New York.
The burbs?
Yeah.
Is there any, is there any specific accent out there that you don't hear in the city?
I mean, most of the people that where I'm from are from like Brooklyn and
right.
from Queens. So you have a lot of coffee and stuff like uh-huh. that, you know?
I love coffee.
I feel like the upstate accent is more like a Illinois
Midwest.
Kind of
that's like
yeah.
Western
like,
New York though. Oh, that's yeah. not like from where
I was
from.
Just thinking it was close to Canada.
Yeah, it's close to Michigan too.
Oh, okay.
So like, but that's way west, you know, like I'm from like 45 minutes away.
God. Well, 45
well,
minutes away.
Nobody has an accent at Chardonnay's. They only speak the language of love.
I cannot wait for Jenna, you know, to have another Jenna Tari ladies night at Chardonnay's. I also with this claw motion, uh-huh. Eating the desserts, I've had this idea of a thing. We have to do like a finger food menu at Chardonnay's.
Oh my God. Well,
and
I started
with
fish sticks. I started with fish sticks and cocktail sauce.
I definitely think there might be some mozzarella sticks as well.
Oh yeah. Mozz sticks.
Poppers. Yes.
Jalapeno poppers.
We are just going, we can't waste all of this Chardonnay's goodness
no.
on this one
Save
episode.
It. Save it, everybody.
Thank you all for tuning in. This is The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.